Hello and welcome to Ukraine Calling, your weekly review of what's been happening in Ukraine with a focus on a main issue. I'm Oksana Smerichuk for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv, and here's a look at some of the stories that were in the news this week. Visa-free travel to the EU for Ukrainians. Ukrainians will soon be able to travel to the EU without visas. This week, the European Parliament voted overwhelmingly in favour of the bill that waives visa requirements to all Ukrainians who hold a biometric passport. On Thursday, 6th of April, 521 parliamentarians voted for the bill, 75 voted against, and 36 abstained. This has been a long process and one final step remains. The Council of Ministers must formally adopt the bill. This is expected to happen by June. The new law will allow Ukrainians visa-free travel for tourism, to visit relatives or friends, for business purposes but not for work. Belgian Euro MP Maria Gabriel, rapporteur for the proposal, said that this was another very strong message that Ukraine is a key partner for the European Union in the Eastern Partnership. Ukraine's European Integration Minister also hailed the decision, calling it a strong signal to the aggressor that Ukraine is on its way back to the European family. Others were somewhat less optimistic, calling this a symbolic gesture and that Ukraine was unlikely to be offered EU membership anytime soon. We'll post a link to the European Parliament announcement of the vote on our website. On Monday, the International Monetary Fund announced the issue of a tranche of $1 billion US dollars to Ukraine after holding its third review. The IMF had delayed its decision to issue the loan in order to assess the impact of a newly imposed trade blockade with separatist-held Donetsk and Luhansk territories. The conclusion of the IMF assessment was that the blockade would only have a moderate impact on economic growth. So far, Ukraine has received $8.38 billion from the IMF since 2015, which includes the tranche announced on Monday. This is part of a $17.5 billion loan to Ukraine's economy to help it climb out of the recession, which began with the annexation of Crimea and the Russian-backed separatist insurgency. The IMF also set out a list of demands that Ukraine should fulfill by 2019. That would include pension reform by raising the pension age and doing more to tackle corruption. The fund encouraged implementing structural reforms and taming high public debt. Eurovision. Criticism from the European Broadcasting Union. EBU Director General Ingrid Deltonre wrote a letter to Prime Minister of Ukraine Volodymyr Groysman, warning that Ukraine can be excluded from future competitions if the Ukrainian government does not allow the Russian contestant Yulia Samoilova to enter the country. In addition, she told the Ukrainian Prime Minister that some of the participants may consider leaving the contest. She stated that no previous host country has prevented an artist performing at the Eurovision Song Contest, and the EBU would not like a precedent to be set in 2017. She added that the EBU considers the current ban of the Russian singer as unacceptable. Military cooperation deal signed with Canada. On Monday, the 3rd of April, Canadian Defence Minister Harjit Sajjan met Ukrainian Defence Minister Stepan Poltorak to sign the Canada-Ukraine Defence Cooperation Arrangement. This is a bilateral arrangement for mutual cooperation in areas such as defence policy, defence research and development and production, and also military education. This arrangement could have far-reaching implications for Ukraine's efforts to buy Canada-made weapons. Canada had looked into putting Ukraine on the automatic firearms control list, which would allow Canadian exporters to sell Ukraine weapons. Ukrainian Minister Poltorak said that now the new cooperation agreement would be a step towards Ukraine getting on this list. He explained that the weapons that Ukraine would be seeking would be defensive in nature and intended to repel attacks by Russian-backed separatists who use sophisticated heavy weapons. The war. As journalist Brian Whitmore reminds us, 3 years ago this week, Russia's hybrid war against Ukraine began in earnest. Russian-backed mobs and militias began storming and taking over government buildings. In 3 years, almost 10,000 people have been killed and around 2 million displaced. The last days of March saw active hostilities all along the front line. Some areas, particularly those just north of Donetsk, saw heavy shelling 24/7. The Minsk Trilateral Contact Group agreed to a ceasefire from the 1st of April. This did result in a certain de-escalation over 2 days, but then the attacks resumed. Ukraine, once again, has suffered casualties. This past week, 5 soldiers were killed in action on the front line and 39 wounded in action. In the meantime, the Vice Speaker of the Parliament, Irina Heraschenko, who was also the representative of the Humanitarian Issues Group in the Minsk process, divided the latest update on missing persons due to the war. In the meantime, the Vice Speaker of the Parliament, Irina Heraschenko, who is also the representative of the Humanitarian Issues Group in the Minsk process, provided the latest update on missing persons due to the war. At the moment, there are 121 persons who have been illegally detained in parts of Donetsk and Luhansk oblasts controlled by Russia-backed separatists. There are 418 persons who are missing. Public broadcasting chief to be selected next week. Ukraine's media system is poised for more change. Next week, the recently reconfigured public broadcaster will have a new director. Ukraine calling listeners may remember, the political elite now in power made a commitment to give up control over broadcasting, to convert the state-owned Ukrainian TV and radio broadcasting company, a leftover from the Soviet era, into a public broadcaster that would not be controlled by the state. It's been a long and difficult process, but most of the pieces are in place. The legislation, the documentation, the board of directors. And the selection process for a new chief is in the final phase. 8 people applied for the job. Zuroa Balasanya, Roman Vebranovsky, Yuri Darahan, Oleksandr Zorka, Oleksandr Zirin, Oleksandr Kovalenko, Oleg Nalivaiko and Marek Sierant. Alasanya has held the job in the past. Nalivaiko is the acting head and they're considered the two frontrunners. On Monday, 10th of April, each candidate will be presenting their concept for the broadcaster in a public interview that will be streamed live. Afterwards, the board of directors will make their decision in camera. Later in the show, we'll bring you a feature about public broadcasting. Marta Dechok interviews Andriy Kulikov, the head and co-founder of Hromadske Radio, Public Radio Ukraine.
Most of the news about Ukraine that appears in international headlines is bad news. A Russian opposition leader assassinated in Kyiv, escalation of hostilities in eastern Ukraine in the war, corruption, arrest of corrupt officials. But there's a lot more going on in Ukraine than bad news. And so this week we're going to look at a sector where there have been some positive changes, and that's the media sector. Joining us is Andriy Kulikov. He is the head and co-founder of Hromadske Radio, Public Radio Ukraine. And he's a longtime journalist. He worked as a print journalist in the Soviet era. After that, he worked for BBC in England for many years, then returned to Ukraine and built an illustrious television career. And a few years ago, he started focusing all of his attention on building public radio. Mr. Kulikov, thank you very much for finding the time to join us today.
Thank you for coming to us.
One of the positive developments that I've seen in Ukraine over the past few years that hasn't received a lot of attention internationally or domestically, really, is that censorship has ended. State censorship ended when the former president Yanukovych was deposed. And for the past number of years, journalists, media outlets have been working in really what I see as a rather new context. You've been working as a journalist for a number of years. I thought we'd start our conversation with a broad conceptual question. What is the best way to safeguard free speech?
The best way to safeguard free speech is to rely on the sum of individual efforts coming from individual journalists. The freedom of speech, I think, exists to the extent that every one of us accepts responsibility for exercising our own rights to free speech. Of course, if we join our efforts in some sort of organization, be it a union, like professional union, or be it a broadcasting organization owned by journalists who combine their efforts, then the effect may be better.
Let's talk about Hromadske Radio. You are the head of Hromadske Radio, Public Radio Ukraine. Our listeners know about Hromadske Radio because they listen to our show, but I very often get asked, what exactly is Hromadske Radio? Is it like BBC in Ukraine? Is it like NPR, National Public Radio in the US, or is it a different model? Could you explain to us what exactly is Hromadske Radio?
Well, I'm not acquainted with the foreign broadcasting organizations to the extent that I can draw absolute parallels, but I think that it is more or less resemblant of public broadcasting services found in the USA, or public broadcasters found in the USA, whereby public broadcasters rely on financial support from their listeners. We are not as much relying on financial support from listeners so far, although we were and still are conducting a number of rather successful crowdfunding campaigns.
Ah, that's exactly what I was going to ask you about. Who funds Hromadske Radio? Where do they get their money? So you were saying you're running a crowdfunding campaign?
Yes, we are running this campaign now, and we set ourselves a very ambitious aim to collect 3 million hryvnia within 6 months. We are rather behind the schedule now, but we still are looking for this money, and if anyone wants, they may go to the Patrimony or support knob on our website and make a donation using their debit cards or whatever. But given the low income level of Ukrainians, and given the fact that they are still not very much used to providing support to new enterprises through such means, we also rely very much on foreign grants. And these grants come from a number of foreign embassies and international public organizations. We have some support from Canada. We have some support from the UK and Poland and other countries. Not directly from their governments as a rule, but from some programs and organizations established by those governments, like CEDA, for instance, or USAID, or different quasi-non-governmental organizations, and some non-governmental organizations.
So that sounds like the NPR model, where it's listener and donations from foundations and various organizations. Thank you for explaining that. Let's broaden the lens a little bit. Ukraine is about to have a fully-fledged public broadcasting system. Just a bit of background for our listeners. During the Soviet era, the entire broadcast sector was owned and controlled by the Soviet state, the Communist Party. When Ukraine declared independence, they privatized most of the broadcast sector. But political elites, because they believe that media and television and radio are instruments of power, they kept one national TV station, national radio, and also on the regional levels. So Ukraine's had this hybrid, mainly private but partly state-owned system. And again, something that's changed since the event, this, the Revolution of Dignity, the Euromaidan protests, is that the new political elite, President Poroshenko, the government, they've made a commitment to give up state control over the broadcast sector and transform it into a public broadcasting system. And there's been a long time preparing the legislation and so on. And it's now in the final phases, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe there's now the selection process of who's going to be the director is underway, and shortly we'll have a name who heads this up. Could you explain, because again, this is something people ask me a lot, so there's Public Radio Ukraine, Hromadske Radio, but there's Suspilne Radio, Suspilne Molenia, State Broadcaster, Public Broadcaster. How does Hromadske Radio fit into the bigger picture of public broadcasting in Ukraine?
I think the major difference now between the, let's say it, big public broadcaster and the small public broadcaster, which Hromadske Radio is that we do not take any money from state budget, whereby the newly created Suspilne Movlenia, or the public broadcaster.
Sorry, again, that's the confusion, because in English there's just the one word, public.
Yes, yes, yes. Let's call ourselves, well, public radio. Let's distinguish public radio, because we do not do television, and public broadcaster, because they are supposed to do both radio and television.
Okay.
Public radio and public broadcaster. So the public broadcaster is supposed to be financed from the state budget. Public radio is not and will not be financed from the state budget.
Is that your choice or is that the reality?
This is absolutely our choice, because we think that being financed from the state budget does create risks of state officials trying to interfere into our affairs and to influence our editorial policy. In the same way, we do not accept what is called political advertisement in Ukraine. This is a lucrative way of earning money, especially during the times of elections. And we had some people from different political parties approach us with huge sums, but we decided out of principle not to engage in political advertisement, because again, this is one of the ways to become dependent on different political groups. And this is one of the temptations that many journalists and broadcasting and print organizations go through in Ukraine. Because as soon as you start to take money from someone, you become reliant on this money and on this someone. We would rather prefer to be dependent on our listeners, who may support us in different ways and do not pose a threat to our editorial independence, as anyway we are meant to work for them, whether they give us money or not.
Well, are you open to commercial advertising? A lot of public
yes.
broadcasters now do take commercial advertising. BBC, CBC, they all run ads for financial reasons.
Yes, we are open to commercial advertising, and we would like to see more of it come our way. Although, again, there may be exceptions to some of the goods, commodities, and services that we advertise on our waves, like, for instance, some luxury goods or some practices and commodities that we may deem unhealthy, both for physical and moral, so to say, health of our listeners.
Listeners of Ukraine Calling hear this show, but because it's an English language audience, they don't maybe have an idea of what kind of programming the rest of Hromadske Radio does. Can you tell us a little bit about what is it about your programming that makes you unique, interesting, worth listening to?
Well, I don't think that we are as unique as we probably sometimes create an impression of, because I'm sure that among the hundreds of radio stations that exist in different corners of Ukraine, there are some lesser known radio stations which provide approximately the same range of programming as we do, but they are mostly in different smaller towns and rather remote locations, so they are not heard on the national level. But to try to describe our produce, I would say, first of all, it's news and current affairs.
Mm-hmm. International, domestic, or both?
Mostly domestic, because we have very few people who work for us or support us abroad, one of them being our today's interviewer, Marta Dychok, also probably three or four people in other countries. But again,
let's have a shout out. Anybody listening who would like to be a foreign correspondent for Hromadske Radio, please get in touch with our editorial board.
Absolutely. But mind you that this is a voluntary work and you are not going to be paid, at least not very, very soon.
Well,
this.
Until that commercial advertising starts rolling in.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's mostly domestic. Oh, of course, sometimes we do not rely on correspondents abroad. We just call people who are in the news abroad, in Russia or Belarus or France or Poland, for that matter, sometimes in Canada. And of course, we are talking not only to journalists there. For instance, today, as far as I know, we had an interview with the Ukrainian ambassador in Canada, Mr. Andriy Shevchenko. And there are ways of getting information from different countries. But the bulk of our broadcasting comes from Ukraine, because we have quite a network of correspondents and also colleagues who would sometimes talk to us in different cities and regions of Ukraine. We travel around Ukraine. We pay special attention to the east of the country where there's warfare now going on. And we also pay special attention to Crimea, the peninsula which was annexed by Russia. Although we do not have many people who would be willing to openly cooperate with us in that territory, we still find ways to glean information from there. On the other hand, we have quite a lot of programs with social, so to say, significance.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us an example?
Well, for instance, there's a program which is called the Justice Gene or whatever, which explains how people can safeguard their rights in their everyday life.
So that's like public service, right?
Yeah, I would say yes, you're right. That's like a public service. Also, some historical programs, some programs of aimed at explaining the life of minorities in Ukraine. And this includes both ethnic minorities or religious minorities or sexual minorities, whatever. We do this because we feel that everyone has the right to their interest to be taken into account.
What's your most popular program? Apart from Ukraine Calling, that is.
Yeah, of course. By the way, if you go to our website and see how many people listen to Ukraine Calling, you will easily see that it is among the most popular programs of Hromadske Radio, public radio, because it is rather unique. Not only it is done in the English language, whereas the rest of the programs are in Ukrainian or Russian, but it also gives an international perspective to what's going on in Ukraine. And as a program, this is exactly a unique product, which we would like our other programs to be as well. We would like them to be as unique as Ukraine Calling is. So it's not just words. Go and see the figures. You can find the number of visits to the pages of different programs. And of course, there are programs in Ukrainian or Russian which have more visitors or listeners than Ukraine Calling. But on the average, I think that this is a very good number of visitors coming to that. One of the reasons being not only the quality of the program, but also the lack of information from Ukraine coming in foreign languages, in English in particular. So,
well, thank you for your kind words, but I'm still interested in Ukraine. What are the most popular programs that are, is it the news, is it the social programming, is it the music, is it the features, the interviews? What are people, what are you finding your audiences, or all of it is equally interesting?
Again, it is equally interesting for us to make, not so much equally interesting for people to listen to. And it also depends on competition. Wherever we are working with topics that are being widely covered by other broadcasters in Ukraine, there we find that the number of listeners or visitors to our pages is not as high as we would like them to see, unless we provide a special angle on the topic, which we often try to do. On the average, I would say that those programs which have applicable significance, which teach people something, the social services programs, as you put it, are most popular, explaining to people how to contact the authorities, or even given the time of the work of the checkpoints in the combat zone. You know, this is the knowledge that people gain from us and use immediately or almost immediately. Musical programs are probably not as popular as we would like them to see, partly because in Ukraine, I think there's not enough taste for quality music developed in, among the general public. And we try to give the quality music, not just your easy listening stuff or very easy listening stuff. Historical programs, programs which delve into Ukrainian history, are rather popular. And of course, different exclusive interviews which we sometimes make with ministers. I mean, not the ministers of religion, although sometimes they are popular as well, but ministers of the central Ukrainian government or officials who hold high positions in different Ukrainian regions, and, of course, sometimes with people in the news, whoever they are.
Mm. Well, you've got a wide variety of programs. What I've noticed that audiences for public radio internationally tend to be people who are looking for objective quality information, not the sensational stuff, not the, as you said, easy listening music, but the substantive quality things. Ukraine's been experiencing information warfare for a few years. This is something that Western countries are now beginning to understand what it feels like. How is working in conditions of information warfare affected the work of Hromadske Radio, or has it affected the work?
Well, actually, we have started in the period of information warfare even before Russia has launched aggression, armed aggression against Ukraine. There was an information and propaganda aggression. And since our inception in the summer of 2013, I think we were involved in this information warfare, not out of our own choice, but because the situation was such that it was important to present a non-engaged view of the things that were happening in our country. So we have grown with this. But of course, when the hot war started, the situation became even more challenging for us, especially since we were the first broadcasting company that which started targeted broadcasting to Donbas, where there are Russian troops and where many people have lost their lives, not to mention their property and stuff.
Sorry, can you explain what you mean by targeted broadcasting to that region? Who are you targeting and how are you targeting them and with what goal?
Well, we are talking to people who are ready to listen to something different from Russian propaganda. The matter is that since the war in the east of Ukraine began, and since some parts of the country were occupied by Russian troops or snatched away from the control of central Ukrainian authorities by separatist forces, Ukrainian broadcasting and Ukrainian mass media were effectively banned from those areas. Transmitters and transmission towers were ruined, and in many cases there was absolutely no way to deliver information born in Ukraine to those areas. So we found the ways to introduce our broadcast into this area.
Tell us how. How did you do this? This is interesting.
Well, there was a number of ways and means, like, for instance, getting some of the transmitters to be lent to us. We had rented some of the transmitters, as they say, until the end of the special period. Special period is, of course, being the time when the Ukrainian authority is restored in this area. Not many people in the commercial branch of broadcasting were ready to risk their money in order to launch broadcasting in those areas. It was too risky. And the state machine was too cumbersome to launch such broadcasting. The initiative from the ground, which Hromadsky Radio, public radio, of course, is, was ready to risk the effort, was ready to risk the loss of some of the money. And we did it. We developed a special program called Kyiv Donbass, not a very good title, because it still has a whiff of juxtaposition or separation. But it was necessary to name it in this way to draw people's attention that it is targeted and that it is meant for those areas. And for some time we were in some of the areas in the east of Ukraine, we were the only Ukrainian broadcaster which was available to people on a regular basis.
How do you know who listens to you in those areas? And perhaps are you reaching areas of Ukraine that are not under control of the Ukrainian government? And again, do you know if people in the areas that are not controlled by Ukraine are listening to you?
Well, I know them personally. Sometimes I meet those people, and our colleagues are meeting those people, because quite often we go to the eastern part of the country, next to the front line. Some of us have traveled behind the front line and spent some time in the occupied territory. We talk to people there. We have telephone calls from those territories, and we have some evidence that we are being jammed.
That's a sign of success.
Yeah, and that's the sign of success on the one hand. On the other hand, this is a reason to be sad, because, when you are being jammed, most of the people cannot really listen to you.
Yeah, people have a way of finding. Remember, in the Soviet period, the jamming didn't prevent voices from coming.
Oh, definitely. And this applies to some other measures of counteracting us. Like, for instance, the internet access to our site was restricted or outright banned in Russia, and consequently in Crimea, which is occupied by Russia, because we carried an interview with a speaker of the Muslim organization which is banned in Russia. And they have written to us and demanded that this material is removed from the site. We refused to do so, so they banned the access. However, people write to me from Crimea that they have found ways to overcome, to bypass this restriction.
So just to be clear, you're officially banned in Russia and in the Crimean Peninsula, but people are still being sort of getting around that, the bans and accessing
yes.
their information.
Yes.
Cool. Another sign yes. of success. My colleague here, Timothy Glasgow, has the question for you.
I was thinking as you were speaking, something that has happened in the media here in North America, as I'm sure you're aware, over the last few years, has been a shift from all news organizations, whether it's public or commercial, feeling that they have a sort of an honorable mandate of providing balanced coverage of everything that happens that may or may be political. And I'm wondering if in a place that's so sort of politically volatile as where you are, if you as a broadcaster have to think about providing balanced coverage. Do you try and cover both sides of a story? Or are you just so... Is it just so clearly obvious that there's really only one side to tell that you're just more concerned with telling that? And is there conflict within your organization about it?
Well, there was and there still is some conflict in our organization, but we are mostly on the side of those people that you mentioned. Yes, we think it is our function, not so much a mission, but our function to provide the balanced coverage, to give opportunity for different people to speak. And there's a huge discussion in Ukraine since the war started, whether it is patriotic or how a journalist who has to be a patriot has to behave in these circumstances. Some people say we shall say only good things about our country. Some people say, right or wrong, this is my country. And some people say that to be a patriot in such circumstances is to unswervingly follow professional standards, because our professional standards, I mean journalists in general, or the world over, is truth, accuracy, and some other related things. And truth saves lives. Truth saves souls, if we admit that there is soul. Truth saves your self-respect. Lies kill. Lies deceive. Lies put you in very precarious positions. So this is the answer. We try to be as balanced as we are. Of course, sometimes we err on this or that side, but next morning, next day, we rectify the situation.
I'd like to end on a personal note, and feel free not to answer these questions if you feel they're too intrusive. What is it that motivates you to do what you do? And what are you most proud of that you and Hromadske Radio has accomplished? And what's the most fun thing about working at Hromadske Radio?
The most fun is to meet people who recognize you by your voice. All around the Ukraine, in the east, in the west. The most fun is when, for instance, in Lviv, which is in the west of Ukraine and which is considered the stronghold of Ukrainian patriotism or sometimes Ukrainian nationalism, they say that they are listening to some of our programs in the Russian language because this is the source from which they take the information that is not readily available in other broadcasts. And the same thing is in the east of Ukraine when in mostly Russian-speaking areas, people say, and we listen to you in Ukrainian because we know that what you say is truthful, what you say is useful. What makes me personally tick is not the belief, but the knowledge that radio in modern conditions is instrumental to the democratic development of our country, and it provides, or at least it can provide, or it will provide, a very broad public ground for nationwide discussion. And radio, by its nature, is a very democratic means of communication. And I think that by having launched a small, at that time, and growing now radio operation, we are doing a very useful service to our country and our people.
Public service broadcasting. Thank you very much for all those interesting comments, insights. You're telling our listeners a little bit about how Hromadske Radio operates and what makes you tick. And we'll be sure to post a link to the crowdsourcing initiative. And anybody would like to support this project, you can do so online. And if you have any trouble with it, you can just write to us at hromadskeradio.org and we'll help you make the donation. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Culture. To the uplifting cultural events of the week, one can add the Kvitkatsisek concert at the National Opera in Kyiv. It was first of all a celebration of Ukrainian classical pop music, with some of Ukraine's leading pop artists performing in a wide range of styles, from ethno-pop, like the band Luiku, to alternative pop, which is Kira Mazur, to Euro-style pop, Oksana Bilozir, to traditional classic, like Oksana Mucha. It was all tightly scripted and accompanied by a spectacular light show and directed by Vasyl Vovkun. This Polish performance was in tribute to Kwitka Cisek, an American-Ukrainian recording artist known as Casey Cisek. Internationally, she is most famous for recording You Light Up My Life, the title song of the 1977 film, which became an international hit. But for Ukrainians, she lives on in her two albums of Ukrainian folk-based songs, recorded in 1980 and 1989 in the US with full studio orchestra accompaniment. These songs, which can still be heard on radio, still set a high standard for easy Ukrainian pop classic. Kvitka would still be singing today were it not for breast cancer. This concert was a 10th annual fundraiser produced by Alex Gutmacher to raise awareness of this type of cancer. Funds raised will go to purchase mobile mammography units that travel the countryside and make mammography accessible to Ukrainian women. And in music, there's a great jazz scene in the western Ukrainian city of Lviv. Every year, it hosts the Alpha Jazz Fest, where musicians from all over Ukraine and the world come to play in many outdoor venues. This year's main headliners will be Gordon Goodwin's Big Fat Band, playing the main stage on June 23rd. To get you in the mood, here's a piece by a local Lviv group, the Dzega Jazz Quintet, called Tango on Trostian Hill, Tango na Hori Trostian. Enjoy! And in looking forward, next week we'll have more stories and current events. Tune in for a new episode, and we'd love to hear from you. Write to us at ukrainecalling@hromadskeradio.org. I am Oksana Smerechuk for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv. Thanks for listening.